Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the nostalgic voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Nostalgic?
Yes.
Because?
I've been on the internet this week, my friend.
Okay.
www.brentfordfc.com.
Indeed. Ah, yes.
There it is.
Now I know what you're talking about.
So this is where Brentford are recalling some of their old heroes, their old legends, their goalkeeping greats.
And me.
Got there before me. Where you are going back to Griffin Park. Of course, it is their last season at Griffin Park, and they're just recalling some good memories, and you were the subject this week.
Yeah, it was good fun. Went back there to go through a few of those memories. So the Everton game in particular, which was, when I look back at my time there, probably the biggest moment where we beat Everton in the Cup, and a couple of other ones as well. So that was good fun going back down memory lane.
I like to think I know a lot about your goalkeeping career now, Richard, but there was something that I missed, and you talked about the Fulham game being your first game. It was a testimonial or something. Yeah. What happened?
First games. Hadn't played for a long time, so I'd been at Watford on the bench. Came to Brentford only a couple of weeks into pre-season. The first pre-season game they had was against Fulham. Of course, bitter rivals Fulham. It was Kevin O'Connor's testimonial, so a packed stadium. And we lost 5-0, and I played pretty poorly. And from minute one, I was on the back foot. And I was actually replacing Wojciech Szczęsny, who was there the season before, a bit of a hero with the Brentford faithful. So it didn't get off to the best of starts, but thankfully over time, I managed to win the fans over before I then joined Fulham. And shot myself in the foot.
Interesting that they played Fulham in a testimonial. Quite a feisty encounter, I'd imagine.
It was, yeah. And of course, at the time, the clubs hadn't played each other for a period of time because Brentford, of course, were playing in the lower leagues and, you know, hadn't only been in League One for one season at that point. So it was hadn't faced Fulham for a long period of time. So the fans took it very, very seriously. And I look back now, without making excuses, I hadn't played for a long period of time. I wasn't fully fit. There was a few other factors, and to be honest, I was pretty poor in that game. And it was actually quite hard to come back from it, because then didn't get many more chances in pre-season. Soon lost my place in the team, didn't start the season. Had Ben Hamer coming on loan, Alex McCarthy on loan, Simon Moore played before me. So I was actually the fourth goalkeeper to have played that season. And in the end, the season worked out well. We did well in cup competition. I think we won 5 penalty shootouts that season. We unfortunately lost to Birmingham after beating Fulham, who went on to win the cup that season. And yeah, on a personal level, managed to get the Player of the Season award. So it was a great season in the end, but really turbulent.
Okay, ended well.
Happy ending, yes. In fact, there was a book written about it, which I can plug. Graduation, Life Lessons of a Professional Footballer.
Ah, there it is, the plug. Always a plug for the book. If you'd like to find it, of course, it is on Amazon, I'd imagine,
indeed,
or one
yes.
of those sites. We'll get that into the show every single week. Remember, if you'd like to contact us, very easy to do so at GK Union on Twitter. hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Right, we're going to start with Hugo Lloris. Another difficult weekend for him, especially since he's now out until the new year.
Yeah, a horrible weekend. It's been a tough few weeks, really. Obviously, the mistake he made in the match at home against Southampton, I believe it was. And then, of course, conceding 7 during the week, which, I mean, we haven't actually discussed on the show, but I certainly didn't think he was at fault for any of them. I know people were trying to pick fault with them. And of course, like anything, you can go into real detail. But certainly with this, it was an error, and it's then obviously compounded by injury. And it was a horrible one. You could see the way in which he fell. It was awkward. And just the whole situation. I think initially it's a bad decision. He's going backwards, and goalkeepers will be in this position a lot where you're backpedaling. He wasn't on his side. Like sometimes you're often taught if you're coming for a cross, you almost approach it slightly moving sideways rather than going directly backwards. So he was off balance anyway. The moment he's off balance, the correct decision would have been a parry initially, to try and parry it over the bar, ideally. Obviously tried to catch it, realised he was going back into his goal, dropped the ball. They score, and then, of course, lands in such an awkward fashion and has dislocated his elbow. So, yeah, look, if you're trying to learn from it, and obviously goalkeepers listening in, it is one that if the ball's going under your bar, often it is the safer option. If you don't think you're able to catch it and land correctly, the safer option is to try and get a big parry, ideally up and over the bar if you can, and then focus on your landing. And if you can do that well, then yes, you give away a corner. A few people might say, oh, you should have held it, but it is the safer play. In this situation, look, another day he does that and someone clears and he lands okay, we don't talk about it. But of course, the fact that it ends up in a goal and he landed in the way that he did, it is quite a serious injury. And certainly for a goalkeeper to dislocate his elbow in the way that he has, not an easy one to come back from. What I would say about this that is quite interesting is that Hugo Lloris, for me, has got quite a lot of stick in the last year or so. I think unwarranted, largely. I think that last season he was actually very good. Yes, he made some major errors, and they were in major games, but I think on the whole, he was very solid and had a good season. I do feel that we're at a point where familiarity breeds contempt. I think that we're going to see him move on at some point. What I think could happen with this injury is it will go one or two ways, because of course Gazzaniga will get his chance. Now, if Gazzaniga takes his chance, then I think that will naturally see Hugo Lloris move on at that point anyway. If it doesn't, if Gazzaniga struggles, then it might be that sometimes, and you often find this with players, that you're more appreciated when you're injured than when you're playing, because actually people see you in a different light. If Gazzaniga really struggles over the next couple of months, suddenly people will focus on the positive of Hugo Lloris, and people will be excited for Hugo Lloris to return rather than seeing Gazzaniga flourish and thinking, oh, we don't need Hugo Lloris anymore.
And funnily enough, the error itself was almost a bit overshadowed by the injury, which was horrible, by the way, and the way he landed, it did not look pleasant. I'm not saying that we must now not focus on the error as a result, but it kind of overshadowed that particular thing. And we spoke about something very similar last week with Kamil Grabara with Huddersfield, where he almost threw it to the attacker as well. That's what happened here. And we've seen a few of these errors from Hugo Lloris. Like you said before as well, in terms of having a break for a goalkeeper, it might work in his favour slightly?
In a weird way, because often, I found this when I played, that sometimes when you're injured, you're appreciated that little bit more, because people then maybe realise what it is that you bring to the team. And look, Hugo Lloris, for the criticism that he gets, you know, you look at it, he is one of the top goalkeepers in the world. He is a World Cup winning goalkeeper. Last season, statistically, whether you buy into the goalkeeping stats or not, he was second behind Alisson. So actually, there was a lot of good that he was doing, but it's very easy to look at the major errors that he made against, was it Barcelona last season? And again, when he tends to make an error, it tends to be a big error. So it's very easy to see that. I hope for his sake that this does work in his favour. The other thing just to touch on, and where I could feel his pain to an extent, I dislocated my shoulder, and I certainly know with the dislocation, it is one of the most painful. For all the bones that I broke when I played and split my arm, broke my cheek, my eye, whatever, that was actually the most painful. Eye socket, yeah. So, but that was actually the most painful, was the dislocation as opposed to the breaking of bones. So you could see they brought on the stretcher. Obviously, there was gas and air and everything. It's a horrible, horrible feeling when you first feel that dislocation and then trying to get the joint back into where it needs to be. I think the good news is, from what we understand, is he hasn't broke the bone, which often happens. If you dislocate the elbow or dislocate the shoulder, there might be a small break as well, which can make it a lot more complicated. From what I understand, it is just a simple dislocation. But of course, as a goalkeeper and anyone listening in that's had a dislocation of one of your upper limbs, then of course it can take that little bit longer, because you do need to find a way to dive on it and be confident enough to be diving on it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Tottenham have released that statement saying that no surgery is required, but he's definitely out until the new year, which means Spurs will have to delve into their reserves, which is what West Ham are having to do now as well. Lucas Fabianski, of course, out for 3 months with a hip injury, and Roberto has come in. This is a 33-year-old they signed on a free transfer from Malaga in the summer. They also brought in David Martin from Millwall as well. But it just goes to show, doesn't it, how important that recruitment is now for your second and third choice goalkeeper, because all it takes is one injury for things to change. And West Ham in particular, I'm not saying this is down to Roberto, but a 7-game unbeaten run was ended with defeat to Palace at the weekend.
It was, and look, this is where now you need to carry three top quality goalkeepers if you're a Premier League team, because the rules have changed slightly from what I understand. Emergency loans have changed. And you actually consider this. This is interesting. And I don't know the exact rules for the Premier League, but certainly in the Championship, and I believe it to be the same, is that you're allowed to loan in an emergency loan, a goalkeeper, providing no one on your books has played 5 professional games. So, for instance, you'll see certain teams in League 2 that might only carry one goalkeeper, because they know that if he gets injured, they might have a young kid on the bench. They can then loan in a goalkeeper to come and play for a few weeks. Now, that's absolutely fine if you're in League 2. The moment you go up the leagues, it becomes more difficult, because sometimes it might be that you're looking to loan a goalkeeper. In fact, this is where the Championship and Premier League is different, because in the Championship, for instance, you can't loan from the Premier League because the loan window is shut. So even an emergency loan, you can't loan from the Premier League, is what I understand. So you're then looking around the Championship to find a goalkeeper to loan. Well, imagine you're another Championship team. Are you going to help out that other Championship team by giving them your third choice for a month? It might be great for your third choice to go and play Championship football, but you're looking at it thinking, actually, I'm strengthening a team that I don't want to strengthen. So actually, you're not going to get that favour. So suddenly you'll see Championship teams that might have to loan a League One goalkeeper on an emergency loan. So I think now, which is good news for professional goalkeepers, that every single Premier League team, every single Championship team needs to carry three decent goalkeepers.
going back to Roberto himself, he did make a very good save in that game from Sebastian Allaire, and a bit of commentary I think you'll be happy with. And listen, I know that it's difficult when you're doing highlights for a package like Match of the Day. In this case, it was Alistair Mann. I've been there when you don't have a pundit with you and you just have to commentate on the game and pass comment as well, which commentators don't normally do. And sometimes the guys that I know don't like to do, because they're very much like, I'm here to denote what's happening. A pundit, an ex-footballer, is the guy who's supposed to analyse it. However, when you are a solo commentator, you have to sometimes do that. Jonathan Pearce tends to always do it. I think he does like doing it. On this case, it was Alistair Mann. Good save from Roberto. I'll just read out the commentary for you, mate.
Go on.
A terrific chance for Allaire, who, in a way, hit it at the goalkeeper. Yes, we give the goalkeeper credit, but I think, moreover, Allaire gave him the chance by hitting it towards him. I think you put that down as a miss.
Do I need to comment?
You don't. And I'm just going to quickly move on to Jordan Pickford. Everton lost to Burnley this weekend. Jeff Hendrick with a goal. And Alan Shearer says the goalkeeper should do better, I think.
No.
Didn't elaborate on it. That was it.
That was it. No drilling down as to why. Should he do better? No. I mean, can he come for the cross? Absolutely not. He's moved from one side of the goal to the other side of the goal. Well, it's an excellent finish, by the way. Tucked it into that near post very, very well. But this might go back. The only thing I can imagine as to why he would have made that comment is that it goes back to the rule of thumb that if you get beaten on your near post, it is your fault, which most people tend to believe. But it's not always true. And this is a good example where you're moving from one side of the goal to the other. Sometimes you just can't get there quick enough. When the finish is as precise as it was, then it would be a world-class save if you save it. And I always make this point, and I did it in regards to Hugo Lloris's 7 that he conceded. I got asked a question. Well, look, it's, you know, you should have saved the second, I think it was. Are you telling me that no one else in the world can save that? No, I'm not telling you that. There are goalkeepers that can save that, but that doesn't make it a mistake. And it's the same with this one. Is it savable? Does somebody make that save? Possibly. There is possibly a goalkeeper that can move across their goal slightly quicker and has ever so slightly better reactions and pulls off a world-class save. But that does not constitute an error. And I think we need to get that right, in that an error is, I guess, where the majority would save it. That's probably how I'd describe it, more than the majority. You know, it would need to be something where 8 times out of 10, it is saved. Now, if that is the case, it constitutes an error. If it's not the case, then you have to give credit to the striker who's made a very good finish. And if it is a save, it goes down as a world-class save.
Yeah, and a lad who did make an error that was an 80% error, if that's what you're saying, last week was Dean Henderson against Liverpool. He's bounced back, and brilliant. It was quite funny to hear the punditry, because I guess for goalkeepers like yourself, you're like, well, yeah, we knew he'd bounce back. We know that about Dean Henderson. He is a good goalkeeper, like you said. George Long mentioned it and said, you know, it's the easy ones. It's the easy ones where you make an error. He made 2 very good saves. First from Danny Welbeck, a one-on-one, and secondly, in the dying moments, from Craig Dawson, a point-blank header.
Yep. Exactly that. I mean, if you were to say that he cost them a point the week before, then he certainly won them a point here in this game. And that is, for me, why Dean Henderson will go on to become one of the top goalkeepers that we have produced in this country. Because I think, look, a lot's made. We touched on his social media, the confidence that he obviously has. He really exudes that. But this is a great example. So you'd, if there's a test, okay, you're in the Premier League now. You've made a high-profile error, and it was a bad error. What can you do in the next game? And he did. He made crucial saves at crucial times, and they were excellent saves as well. And just looking at him, and I'm always massive on body language, you could tell very early on in this game that he was absolutely fine. It hadn't bothered him one bit what happened in the previous game. Now, from a logical point of view, and I'll say this to goalkeepers, we know that's how it should be. However, goalkeeping isn't necessarily always logical. You will have certain feelings, certain emotions. If you've made a mistake the week before, you might go into your next game feeling a bit nervous because you know you've made that mistake. Now, as best you can, you need to play every single game in a neutral setting, I would say. And Dean Henderson does this, regardless whether he's had a worldie the week before or he's had a dreadful game the week before. He seems to approach every single game with the right mindset, the same mindset. And if you can show that level of consistency, yes, you will still make mistakes because everybody does. But over a period of time, over a period of a season, you're going to make far less than an emotional goalkeeper that has several good games and several bad games. You just simply can't afford to do that as a goalkeeper.
Okay, that wraps up the Premier League. But before we move on, just very quickly, Matty Longstaff, a great goal for Newcastle, the winner against Manchester United. Could David De Gea have done any better with that?
No, and I look, again, it's this falls back into that category of, is there a goalkeeper that saves it? Well, ordinarily, David De Gea would be the goalkeeper that saves it. Now, this is where there's no black and white in goalkeeping, that the argument could be that if he sets ever so slightly quicker, he might get an extra foot on his dive and he might tip that round the post. But this is it. We're talking milliseconds. And a lot of it is down to the set. If you time your set to absolute perfection and you explode the moment it's struck and you are in that moment energetic, you've got the adrenaline pumping and you fire yourself down into that bottom right-hand corner, you may well get a hand and turn it round the post. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen again.
It didn't go right in the corner, did it?
No, it didn't. It didn't. But again, the shape of the strike, it wasn't going away from him. It was coming towards him. So it's a beautiful strike. Like, he could not have nailed that any better. As it's come to him on the move, he's absolutely struck it to perfection. Does a goalkeeper save it? Again, if they do, it is a world-class save. No blame attached whatsoever.
Moving on to the Championship now and the interesting case of Simon Sluger, the Luton goalkeeper. We've got keeper capers coming up and this was certainly a contender for it. But the one that we've got, which we will get onto in a few minutes or so, absolutely eclipses it. But Sluger, in the game against Derby, firstly, he's allowed a Matty Pearson back pass to roll under his feet. And then there's a case later on where you could argue he could have saved a Tom Lawrence cross come shot. It went in at the near post. But Graham Jones in particular, we'll get onto these comments as well, has kind of lambasted him for it. They are errors.
Yeah, I mean, look, the first one, there's not a lot you can say, really. Ball passed back to him, lack of concentration. That's all it can be, because he's just... it's not bobbled over his foot. I think the more you've seen it, he's just not put his foot in the right position. The only thing I can think is that he's already thinking about the next pass. Now, we've all been there, ball coming back, and you're considering, are you going to play out to your fullback? Is it going to be a first-time strike? Are you going to look to take a touch and play to a winger? I just think he's already thinking about the next pass. There's no pressure on him whatsoever. He's not looking at the ball, and it's a very, very basic error. And unfortunately, because of the pace on the ball, the moment that he's missed it, he's done. There's nothing he can do. So it's a basic error. It's one that, you know, if you're going to give coaching tips, it's almost pointless, because he'll know himself exactly what it needs to be. And that you... I wouldn't necessarily say that you shouldn't be thinking about what's next, because you should, but you should also have the ability to have that nice touch. And it's something that you'll do in practice over and over again. Ball coming towards you, first and foremost, get your touch right and have in mind what you're about to do. And it's something that if you are going to goalkeeping practice, goalkeepers listening in, if you are going to goalkeeping practice, it's something you should be working on reasonably regularly, that good first touch, because that makes your strike that much easier. Whether you do play to a fullback, clip it into a striker, clip it into a winger, it's very much about that first touch. But unfortunately, in this case, the focus isn't there, the concentration isn't there, and it's gone under his foot. The second one, it's funny how this happens, and I've certainly had this in games where it feels like you make one error, you often make two, and this is where the best don't. The best seem to have a way of getting themselves back into that correct mindset straight away. Now, this is a really awkward ball that's been fired in. I don't think Tom Lawrence means it by any means. I think it's a shank. It's a shank that's gone right in the near post. And if he saves it, it is a good save. I would say, yes, it's an error, but if he saves it, it's a good save, because it's one where, of course, you're set for a cross. So you might be 2 or 3 yards from goal, probably slightly towards back stick because of where the correct position would be based on percentages. And of course, he suddenly shanked it. It's firing in towards your near post. You do need to be quick. You need to move across your goal quickly, get a powerful dive away. And if he turns it around the post, it does go down as a good save. Unfortunately, the basics are that the ball's been fired in from a crossing position and it's gone in the goal. That can't happen. Your positioning as a goalkeeper, ordinarily, rule of thumb, you're as advanced as you possibly can be without running the risk of conceding. So the only thing I can think, we don't get a great view as to where his starting position is, but ultimately it must have been ever so slightly too advanced or ever so slightly too far towards his back stick, because he doesn't get there and it does go in. Therefore, you have to hold your hands up.
I find this an intriguing case with Sluger, because he came in at the start of the season. They broke a 30-year record, a 30-year transfer record to sign him. He came from Croatia, where he is an international as well, of course. He spent a lot of his time in the youth setup at Juve. He made an error on the opening day of the season against Middlesbrough. That was beamed all over the country. That was on Sky Sports, so plenty of people saw that one. He's made a few contentious errors, I suppose, since then. Luton yet to keep a clean sheet. You've got James Shea waiting in the wings as well. There are also some quotes from Graham Jones before I let you come in with your comment, Rich. And he said, it would be easy for me to blame the goalkeeper in the last however many games. I'm not that type of person. I'm not that type of coach. He kind of has already alluded to the goalkeeper straight away. Look, he would have been asked the question, so he's probably responding to that. However, interesting comments. He said, today, I can't defend him. It's two goalkeeping errors. That's the truth. We got beat 2-0 because of two goalkeeping errors. Those are the basics of the game. We're talking about controlling the ball and defending your near post, not getting shocked, and that's what happened. Life as a goalkeeper.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, and again, it's not particularly nice for a goalkeeper to hit. It is an interesting one, though, you know, and I follow every goalkeeper. I get alerts every day on every single goalkeeper. I am aware that he's under fire at the moment. Now, something I would say, and this is where, when it comes to recruitment, it's very interesting. I look at goalkeepers from all over the world on a daily basis, and I've got a good idea as to the foreign market. Now, you'll see some goalkeepers who are technically fantastic. I'm watching them on film. Side volley is just a dream. They're clipping out to the fullbacks, wingers, making great saves, powerful on crosses. And you think, do you know what? You're a top-end Premier League goalkeeper. However, these are in different leagues around the world. What you tend to find, arguably the Championship more than any other league, I would say is the hardest league for a goalkeeper, because you've got a real blend of having a lot to do. It's a really fast-paced game, arguably a bit more difficult than the Premier League because you've got more aerial balls to deal with, and you're playing extra games each season. You're playing 46 games as opposed to 38, so it's a really packed schedule. So you're constantly under the cosh, you're training hard, you're playing game after game after game, and I think a lot of foreign goalkeepers do find it tough. The much safer recruitment, and a lot of clubs do decide to do this, is to stay with UK-based goalkeepers because they know the landscape, they know how difficult the league is, and we're seeing some of the star performers at the moment in the Championship. I know we'll probably touch on Dylan Phillips because he's been exceptional this season, but again, he knows the landscape. There's other goalkeepers as well that I could touch on this that know the landscape. So I just think there was always a risk in this signing. I do think he'll come good, but again, another thing we see with foreign goalkeepers and foreign players is that it can take a bit of time to adapt to the culture as well. You're coming from somewhere completely different to then move to the UK, to move to Luton, and to get used to the local culture is not an easy thing to do. So he has been thrust into the thick of it. Luton were always going to be up against it a bit, given that they got one of the lowest budgets in the league, and so far it's been tough. I hope they stick by him. James Shea will undoubtedly feel like he deserves a chance, given that he was the goalkeeper in a title-winning team. However, I think if you're going to bring someone in for this kind of money and you've got this kind of belief in them, you do need to stick by them for a period of time, I would suggest, and allow him to adapt to the conditions. Or alternatively, maybe allow James Shea to play for a period of time, but then bring back the goalkeeper that you're choosing to play. That's my thinking on this.
So that's Luton without a clean sheet in the Championship this season. Another team without a clean sheet is QPR, and changes have been made in the goalkeeping department there. Joe Lumley, of course, we've mentioned him a few times on this podcast this season. Some for errors, some for good saves, and some for errors that weren't even his fault. But Liam Kelly was signed in the summer by Mark Warburton, the QPR manager. They were together at Rangers at the time. Liam Kelly didn't really get a look in. He was very young, but he's come in the summer. QPR haven't kept a clean sheet this season, and Warburton has done that classic thing by changing the goalkeepers. We saw it at Fulham last season under Slavisa Jokanović. I think it was 8 games in by the time they'd already used 3 goalkeepers. Warburton has used that same tactic now. Liam Kelly, who had played in the Carabao Cup earlier in the season, has now played the last 2 games for QPR. Joe Lumley on the bench.
Really interesting, because I know in the summer there was a lot of interest in Joe, even rumours linking him with Manchester City and a couple of other clubs. Now, whether there's any truth in these rumours or not, I'm not sure. But when you look at him, he's a young English goalkeeper. He's got that kind of shape. He must be 6'5", 6'6", but he's very athletic. Distribution is ordinarily very, very good. The only thing I think that has changed is that Mark Warburton has a certain way of playing. Now, I experienced this firsthand, and it was something I struggled with because I hadn't ever played that way before, where you really are put under pressure to play out from the back. Now, Joe's got this in the locker, so I have found it a little bit surprising some of the mistakes that he has made. Liam Kelly, on the other hand, obviously knows Mark Warburton very, very well. I've watched him play a couple of times this season. Actually, when I watched him firsthand play against Bristol City, very different in stature, but certainly when it comes to playing out from the back, playing into midfield, he is very, very comfortable. Now, this for me may well be a case of a manager fitting a goalkeeper and a goalkeeper fitting a manager. And as it stands, I can understand why Mark Warburton's made the change, because Liam Kelly does seem a little bit more comfortable playing the way that Mark Warburton wants to play. My word of warning to QPR would be just be careful, because you've got a goalkeeper who's a huge asset in Joe Lumley. Like, in another team, he can be, as he was last season, be a standout performer. And the worry you've got is you leave him on the bench too long, you've got an asset there that is arguably worth several million pounds, could well be worth very, very little. So I don't know what's going to happen long term here, whether this is just a short term, bring Liam Kelly in to see how he does and then maybe look to move Joe Lumley on in terms of sell him maybe in January or sell him in the summer, or whether this is just a short term change and Joe Lumley will eventually find his way back into the team.
You mentioned Dylan Phillips there as well. Considering this is a goalkeeping analysis podcast, we really should do Save of the Week, shouldn't we?
We should.
Yeah, we should. On this occasion, we are going to do it because Dylan Phillips in the 2-2 draw, Charlton against Fulham, or Fulham against Charlton, I should say, it was at Craven Cottage, made two fantastic saves from Bobby de Cordova-Reed. The second one in particular, another point blank header.
Yeah, look, won them a point. And I think, look, I know Dylan very, very well, and it's someone that I can give a lot of insight into, speaking to him as regularly as I do. And I'll always give Dylan huge credit because I know the struggle that he's gone through in order to win that place at Charlton. It hasn't been plain sailing by any means. He's had a few chances previously, and I know he got to the point where it was incredibly frustrating because he always felt like they were bringing in goalkeepers to play ahead of him. Obviously, Ben Amos coming in on loan a couple of seasons ago, Jed Steer being a good example. They're then bringing Chris Maxwell as well last season. Now, it was actually the Chris Maxwell who didn't get in ahead of Dylan in the end. And of course, Dylan ends up finishing the season, gets promotion, obviously makes a mistake in the final, but just showed just how strong a character he is. And then this season, you wondered again, they brought Ben Amos back, who of course was ahead of Dylan Phillips. So you think, is it going to be one of them where at some point Ben gets his chance? Again, another very, very good goalkeeper. You have to give Dylan credit. He's top of all stats from what I can see. He's been brilliant this season. You know, defensively, Charlton have been very, very sound. Again, if you're to believe certain stats, I saw one the other day, the whole expected goals, they do like an expected table. Apparently, Charlton should be 23rd currently, according to that. Now, I don't necessarily believe in a lot of that, but the point being is that he has won them several points this season already. And no, I was delighted to see how he performed against Fulham. He's growing into it. Let's not forget, he's a young English goalkeeper who has a big future, and certainly he's a big part of the Charlton team.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Right, keeper capers. We are going abroad. We're going to the Bundesliga. Thomas Kubek of Augsburg. I'll tell you what, this is one where you sometimes look at errors made by goalkeepers, and we discuss them on this very show. And most of the time you go, oh, I feel for him. Other times you go, do you know what? It wasn't his fault. On this occasion, the only word I can think of is hilarious. It's funny. It was against Borussia Mönchengladbach. They were already 3-0 down, right? Mönchengladbach are now top of the Bundesliga as a result. So they're playing well. However, he's had a stinker.
Well, he has, and I'm sure we'll have this on our Twitter. So firstly, look at the error, because I'm trying to make sense of it. It almost looks like his shoelaces are tied together to begin with, or he's got vertigo. I can't figure out what's happened, because ball comes in, he does this weird action, misses the ball completely. But he's actually after that, when he turns round, and he's still got the opportunity to run towards the ball and maybe palm it out for a corner or kick it away. And he's more focused on trying to stop the man. And again, it's a funny action he does to try and cut the man off, who just walks around him and passes it into an empty net. I've never seen a mistake like this. That's the only thing I can say. Because like you say, most things you see, you've kind of seen before. Or you've seen a similar type goal before. Never in my life have I seen anything like this.
You're right. It's the way that he stumbled over, a bit like he was drunk.
Yeah.
To try and clear it. Obviously, he got his feet mixed up, but he looked a bit like he was drunk. And then rather than go for the ball, like you said, he tried to stop the player. And there's the way his arm flapped down at the end. It was almost like a last-ditch attempt to save it.
Look, I've been there, and I understand what pressure can do to the mind. I would say that. And obviously, it wasn't going particularly well. They're 3-0 down. They're only about 35 minutes into the game. So obviously, they're taking a bit of a beating. So I do understand what pressure can do to the mind. So I'm trying to put myself in his shoes. And I can only assume it's that. I can only assume that he's lost all focus, all consciousness to an extent, because it is something I've never, ever seen before. I'd certainly advise, if you haven't seen it, get yourself on our Twitter, watch it, see if you can make head or tail of it, because I certainly can't.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
And to finish this week's podcast, another man who has finished his career, Tim Howard, has finally hung up those gloves. He played his last game for Colorado Rapids this weekend. He bids a fond farewell to the football world.
He certainly does. Yeah, look, fantastic career. A really interesting career as well. And certainly, I remember when he first came over and when he came to Manchester United, and for a period of time, bearing in mind they'd had some difficulties with goalkeepers and a few that hadn't worked out, certainly since Peter Schmeichel, they obviously went through several different goalkeepers. Now, unfortunately, in some ways, Tim Howard will be seen amongst that group. But I remember for a period of time when he came to United, it was that realisation of, wow, we've got a world beater here. And you do wonder, had a couple of things been different? There was a mistake I remember in particular against Porto that he made. And that seemed pretty critical at the time. And you think back now, very few mistakes that he actually made. But that one at the time was quite critical. And unfortunately, the time at United, I think, was cut short. Now, of course, went to Everton and he was an absolute hero there, season in, season out. Brilliant goalkeeper and goes down as one of the Premier League greats. You do just wonder whether he was maybe almost a little bit of luck away from being Manchester United goalkeeper for 10 years.
Do you really think so? Do you really think so? He could have...
had the ability. That was the point for me in that, you know, when I first saw him, in terms of the athleticism, power, some of the saves he pulled off. And I suppose if you were to look in some ways, and I mean this in a positive way, he was a typical American goalkeeper in that he was so athletic, so powerful in how he moved. And I think that, I guess I look at it and I do look, that had a couple of things just gone differently. He had everything to be the Manchester United goalkeeper. And that's no disrespect to Everton, of course, but he had everything to be that. And you just wonder, you look at goalkeepers that have made it at that level, whether it is just a couple of things going your way. Maybe if that Porto game goes differently and United progressed in the Champions League that season, then that positive start that he'd had to his United career would have continued. So, look, I'll still look back on it from my point of view, hugely positive. A goalkeeper that I think is, I'd arguably say, amongst the top 10 all-time Premier League goalkeepers. I think that's fair.
I'd say he's up there. 132 clean sheets for one in 399 Premier League appearances. Plenty more clean sheets in cup competitions as well, and not just in the Premier League, of course. He actually has made the most saves in a World Cup match as well. So he has that. So as a goalkeeper, I guess it's nice to leave your mark. And as we love on this particular show, a goal-scoring goalkeeper as well. So indeed. Good to remember that. Tim Howard, thank you for the memories. Richard, that is it for another week.
Fantastic.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.